Hey everyone, this is Brian, and welcome again to A Survival Guide for Christian Men. This is episode number 18. You can find all the notes and links and pictures and videos and every great thing I talk about on this show at pbnjnetwork.com/ASG4CM018. So this week, the chapter is a little shorter than last week. Last week was very long. And I know you're not supposed to apologize in podcasting, but I listened to last week's episode, and I just want to apologize. I have a tendency for my voice to sound very humdrum, very dry, very sad sack kind of, and I really do enjoy this, but I have to make it a practice before I hit the little red record button to get myself pumped up, get myself excited so that it comes through on the podcast, and I hope I did that today. I listened to a little music, got myself dancing, especially seeing how, you know, this episode is going to be very difficult. I don't want to make it sound like this is a chore for me, because it's not. I really do enjoy podcasting. I really do enjoy this ministry, and I know it's important, and I want it to be easy to listen to for you guys. So please just disregard last week. I mean, if you got through it, great. The content was good, but the way I delivered it was not so good. So I just want to say I'm sorry for that, and I'm going to try my best not to do that again. So here's me, all excited, energized, and ready to go. So this week, chapter 4, is we're reading out Wild at Heart and Wild at Heart Field Manual. We're doing a dissection of Wild at Heart by John Eldridge. Awesome book, changed my life. And the subject matter I'll be going through is out of the Wild at Heart Field Manual. If you don't have either of these books, you can pick them up by going to, let me get the links here real quick. The Wild at Heart book you can get at pbnjnetwork.com/wildatheart, and the Wild at Heart Field Manual you can get at pbnjnetwork.com/wildatheartfm. And those links, again, will be in the show notes for the show. And before I get started, I just want to talk about Covenant Eyes again. This program is, you know, so important, guys. If you're having trouble with pornography on the internet, and you know, it's bringing down, I know when I struggle with pornography, you feel like crap. And you just feel like dirt, and it's like, I've, you know, repented of this 1,000 times. You know, when is it going to be over? Well, you know what? That's in God's timing. But in the meantime, you need to do what you can do to make yourself accountable and get this crap, you know, out of in front of your eyes. And one way to do that is with Covenant Eyes. Covenant Eyes is a great accountability software. What you do is you install it on your computer, and you pick a couple accountability buddies, you hook them up with their email address on your software, and when you're searching through things that you shouldn't search through, your buddies get a little notice, and they can confront you about that, and get you put back on the straight and narrow. And also, you know, it's an internet filtering system, you know, so that, you know, you just keep that off your computer and keep it away from your kids too. That, you know, that's very, very important to just nip it in the bud before it even becomes an issue. So check that out, man. Covenant Eyes is at pbnjnetwork.com/eyes. Again, there'll be a link to that in the show notes for the show. And that's an affiliate link. So is the Wild at Heart. Those are affiliate links. So if you click on those and purchase, I get a little bit of support for the podcast for that. And I appreciate that. So on with the program. I don't even know if that's a word. Okay. So the wound. This is probably the toughest part of the Wild at Heart book and field manual, because it kind of slaps you upside the head. Most guys are walking through life and they don't even realize they had a wound. I didn't realize I had a wound before I read this book. And I do. I've got a few of them, and they are they're walls for me, basically. They keep me from doing things I want to do, keep me from blessing people I want to bless. And, you know, there are things I got to deal with, and I have been taking steps to deal with those. So I'll be talking about that in this episode. And I might get a little emotional in this episode, and I'm just going to let it ride. And if I have to pause too long, I might cut some of that pause out just for, you know, listening sake. But I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm emotional about this, because it is very emotional. You know, it's emotional because it has to do with my father, my stepfather, and my son. And, you know, it's a generational curse I'm trying to break here. So, yeah, I'm going to get emotional. I'm just going to let you know that right up front, because I got emotional just going through the book. So, and here I am. I'm going to be verbalizing it. All right. Very first question out of the field manual is, what's your gut level reaction to this chapter? What did it stir in you? What did it make you feel? What did it make you want to do? I wrote down, and pardon my French here, it made me want to hug my son and kick my father in the nuts. You know, and I know that my father, you know, he went through the same thing I'm going through, that his father wounded him. So he might have been doing the best he knew how to do. But, and just, I'm not judging, because I'm the same way. I'm a broken person too, but the best he could do wasn't good enough. And the best I can do isn't good enough for my son. I'm going to say that right now. I'm broken. I'm not perfect. But, you know, my dad messed up. You know, my father, I hate to use either of those words, dad or father, because he wasn't either one. And Jim, if you're listening to this, you know, I'm sorry if this is hard to listen to, but, you know, we've talked about this. I'm doing this for the other man out there. I'm not doing this for you. I hope this helps you. I really do. And I wish the best for you, but I'm doing this for all the other men out there. So yeah, you know, it made me want to hug my son and kick my father in the nuts. So there you go. All right, getting your bearings. Your goal is simple but daunting. So, to uncover your wound, you need to see how you've been wounded, understand where the wound came from, and how it has shaped the way you've lived every day of your life, right up to this moment today. Every boy has two questions. Do I have what it takes? Am I powerful? Most men live their lives haunted by the question or crippled by the answer they've been given, because masculinity is bestowed. A boy learns who he is and what he's got from a man or the company of men. Yet every boy in his journey to become a man takes an arrow to the center of his heart in the place of his strength, and the wound is nearly always given by his father. With the wound comes a message, and out of the message, we make a vow. The result is a false self, a deep uncertainty in the soul, and a driven or passive man on the outside. So I'll go back to where it says, the boy takes an arrow to the center of his heart in the place of his strength. You know, the devil is not stupid. You know, I hate to say nice things about, you know, the enemy, but he's not stupid. He's been around a while. You know, like they like to say at work, this isn't his first rodeo. And he knows, he can't see the future. You know, okay? Satan cannot see the future, except for what's been prophesied. Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, he can't tell what God has for me, you know, what my calling is from God. he can see what's up and coming. He can read the signs. But Satan is going to wound you in your greatest strength, okay? So if my greatest strength is reaching out to other men, he's going to wound me right there. And that's where he's going to stop me. Wherever I'm going to do the most damage to him is where he's going to, is where that target's going to be drawn. Okay? So if you want to know, there's a good clue right there, is what is your destiny? What is your calling from God? Well, where is your biggest wound? You know, that's one way of figuring out what has God got for you? What is your calling? What am I here for? Do I have what it takes? The answer is yes, absolutely you have what it takes, because God wired you with what it takes. You know, so if you have a wound, and you know you have that wound, then that should be a clue as to what you're supposed to be doing for God and for the kingdom. So, there you go. All right, setting out. The story of Adam's fall is every man's story. It is simple and straightforward, almost mythic in its brevity and depth. And so every man comes into the world set up for a loss of heart. Every boy in his journey to become a man takes an arrow to the center of his heart and the place of his strength, because the wound is rarely discussed and even more rarely healed. Every man carries a wound, and the wound is nearly always given by the Father. Okay, I got a scripture here. And I think I might make this, put this in big bold letters in the show notes, because it's pretty awesome. Deal well with me for your name's sake. Out of the goodness of your love, deliver me, for I am poor and needy, and my heart is wounded within me. Psalm 109, 21 through 22. That's pretty deep. You know, my heart is wounded. You know, please, Lord, be gentle with me. You know, deal well with me for your name's sake. You know, so for your sake, Lord, please, you know, be gentle with me and deliver me from this wound, for I'm poor and needy. Understanding the masculine journey. In order to understand how a man receives a wound, we must understand the central truth of a boy's journey to manhood. Masculinity is bestowed. A boy learns who he is and what he's got from a man or the company of men. He cannot learn it any other place. He cannot learn it from other boys. He cannot learn it in the world of women. The plan from the beginning of time was that his father would lay the foundation for a young boy's heart and pass on to him the essential knowledge and confidence in his strength. Dad would be the first man in his life and forever the most important man. Above all, he would answer the question for his son and give him his name. You know, that's pretty powerful stuff. You know, your father is the one who gives you your name. You know, the book talks about, you know, when you're born and, you know, those first few years, you're kind of stuck to your mom's side. And she gives you a name. She gives you a name like my little sweetie or my little cuddly one, or, you know, cute little names. But there comes a point where the boy needs to be ripped from the mom, sort of. And it's kind of a violent picture. But, you know, kind of that umbilical cord needs to be cut again, or those apron strings, as they say, need to be cut. And he needs to be brought into the world of men. You know, and, you know, this whole time as he's with his mom, his dad needs to be giving him a name too, like Tiger or Champ or, you know, something tough like that, you know. So there comes a point where a boy needs to decide, do I want to be a little cutie or a little sweetie, or do I want to be Tiger or Champ or, you know, something tough like that, you know. And the dad needs to bring the boy into his world and let him, you know, feed off him, basically. So, there you go. All right, describe a time in your life when you heard words like those Jesus heard from his father. I am deeply proud of you, and you have what it takes. I wrote, from my father, never. I did hear them from my friend Kevin Miles. I was at a men's I hate to use the word retreat, because retreat means to run away, and I don't think that's what men's retreats are for. A men's function, sort of. But Kevin Miles, my friend, was speaking. He had a little breakaway session on rites of passage ceremony, and this is something I was interested in because I had a son at the time. He was pretty young, but you know, I had planned on doing this for him, having a rite of passage ceremony. So during this class, during this class, he came out and asked all the men there, and says, "So has anybody ever sat down and told you that you are now a man? You know, can you define that time in your life when you were made a man? You know, because somebody else told you." And there was probably 20 guys in this class, and maybe two of them could actually raise their hand and say yes. So Kevin, you know, asked anyone who was interested, you know, stand up, and you know, we're going to do this right now. And he basically had a rite of passage ceremony for us right there in that class. And it was very moving. It was an awesome experience because it was the first time anyone ever looked at me and said, "Today you are a man." And I was probably 32 at the time, 33. And you know, it's weird in our culture to think, okay, well, you're 32, 33. Of course, you've been a man for a while now. You've been able to vote. You've been able to be drafted. You've been able to get drunk and drive a car. And you've had, you know, sex and all these things that the culture says makes you a man. But when you think about it, do you really feel like a man? You know, okay, so I went out and got drunk. I'm a man now. Can I quit going to do that? Or do I have to keep doing that to stay a man? You know, things like that. You know, the culture's way of telling us that we're men is just a bunch of crap, because it's something that you got to keep doing. Okay? But during a rite of passage ceremony, they tell you you're a man, and then becomes your training in a man. And I like when people ask me about that, I tell them it's kind of like being a Christian. You know, one day I decided, yes, I want to be a Christian. I want to step up and I want to, you know, give my life to Christ. But at that point, was I perfect? Did I stop making all those same mistakes that I was making before? Did I stop sinning? Did I even know what it meant to be a Christian? No, I did not. You know, so when we have a rite of passage ceremony for a young boy or a young man, he doesn't know what it means to be a man, you know. But that's when you have other men step up and say, "I am going to, you know, invest in your life, and we're going to train you up to know what it means to be a godly man." So yeah, that's when I first heard that, was from Kevin Miles. And I'll put a link to Kevin Miles, his ministry, and the book he wrote about rite of passages. I'll put a link to that and in the show notes, and that'll be an affiliate link on Amazon. So you'll be helping out my friend Kevin, and you'll be helping out this ministry if you go ahead and buy that book. It's a really good book. Next question. Would you say that your father or another key man, or perhaps the company of men, actively intervened on your behalf in order to tell you who you are as a man? When my son was born, is when I really started seeking out Christian manhood, because I realized that I can't do it the same way my father did it. My son deserves better. Not that I didn't deserve better, but my son does deserve better. So I read every book I can get my hands on about manhood. I got around the guys at church who displayed biblical manhood, who displayed a you know a good solid relationship with their sons and with their fathers, and you know I just started soaking this up from other guys at church, you know, and I was very very picky about who I wanted to spend that time with. You know, there was probably no guys that I work with that I wanted to have that influence on me, and it was only guys who I knew were seeking biblical manhood that I really wanted to just hang around and get that from. So there's that. Over the course of your youth up to young manhood, what were you rewarded for, delighted in because of? Was it grades or sports or good morals? Did that really answer the question for you? Nothing that really jumps out at me. I might have been rewarded for my grades, but it doesn't really ring a bell, not to my remembrance. But so I didn't really have that question answered for me. You know, you're really good at this. You have what it takes. Because you know, if it did answer the question, it didn't stick. And so there's that. I find that most men live their lives haunted by the question or crippled by the answer they've been given. How has life answered the question for you? Do you have a sense of what the answer was? Describe it and put it into words. My answers, a couple answers to this. One day, I can't remember the circumstances or what the argument was about, but I remember we were leaving my house, our house, and I might have been 13, 14, and I think I probably upset my mom about something, but the words that just drove a nail into my psyche was, "Do you think you're a man? You're not a man." And for some reason, that just really, really scarred me. And that still comes back to me. And I know that, you know, manhood is bestowed on me by men, and my mom could not ever do that. But that still scarred me. And I know now that I wasn't a man. But still, I don't think that's something that should be said by a parent, not in that context. So yeah, that really hurt me. And another one was when I was in school, I had acute asthma. I couldn't play sports. And the doctors seemed to think that playing an instrument, a wind instrument, would be therapeutic for me. Well, it's not what I wanted to do, so I was never really good at it. And somehow I got stuck with the trombone, and I did not like it. But I still had to practice. And my bedroom was right outside the living room, or right adjacent to the living room, and my bedroom door was probably 4 feet from where my stepfather's recliner was. So I was not allowed to practice my trombone in my bedroom. And I remember times when I had to go out to the tool shed to practice my trombone. And the message that gave me was, you're annoying. You annoy me. I wish you would go away. You know, so, yeah, and that was my stepfather, who, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, our relationship was never good. I remember a lot of dirty looks from my stepfather, and never really any affection from him. So, okay, gotta keep this upbeat and light. Gotta move on. you know, but that, those are a couple instances, one when I was a kid, that I, a couple wounds I took, and that's not even from my, you know, natural father, that's from my mom and my stepfather. So wounds come from lots of places. And when boys are growing up and girls, you know, their psyches are so fragile, and we really have to be careful. I'm talking to you dads. You know, I know you're not going to be perfect as a dad, but you really, really have to handle that heart like it was, you know, just the most fragile little snowflake. And you have to watch every single word you make, every move you make, whether you're passive or you're an aggressive man, you know, if you're checked out or if you're violent, you've got to keep this in check, you know. And you might be frustrated, you know, life might be frustrating you, work, you might be out of work, you know, you might be struggling with alcohol or drugs or pornography, or, you know, just, you might not be able to get along with your wife, but you cannot take that out on your kids. Okay? And if you're having problems with that, please call, please email. I can, you know, talk to you. I can find you help. But you cannot take that on your kids, okay? Even words, you know, words are worse. You know, the wounds you give just by verbal means are even worse because they're not seen, okay? And they last our entire lives, okay? So, wow, this, I gotta keep moving. All right, mothers and sons. It would be good to explore your relationship with your mother before moving on to dad more deeply. After all, a boy is brought into the world by his mother, and she is the center of his universe for those first tender months and years. She suckles him, nurtures him, protects him. She sings to him, reads to him, watches over him, as the old saying goes, like a mother hen. She often names him as well, tender names like My Little Lamb, or Mama's Little Sweetheart, or even My Little Boyfriend. Describe your relationship with your mother. Was it closer than your relationship with your father? Answer that question for the three main phases of boyhood. And it goes through preschool years, grade school, and middle school, high school. I wrote, most of what I remember of my childhood relationship with my mom was that she had to defend me from my stepfather. And as I'm writing this, I realize that that's what Pam does for Joey, defends him from me. You know, this is what tore me up when I was going through this. I do get angry with my son, whether it be homework issues, which we're having tonight, or just, you know, issues with his diabetes. You know, there's numerous things, and sometimes I, you know, go off the handle. I try not to say words that are hurtful, but I do raise my voice, and I tell myself it's because I want him to hear me. I want to get this through to him. That's what I tell myself. But I find that Pam is often getting me to back off. And which, you know, it makes me angry when she does that at the time. But then I look at this and I see that that's exactly what my mom was doing for me from my stepfather, and so am I my stepfather now? I mean, am I just carrying on, you know, the sins of my father? I don't know. I mean, I don't want to. I mean, I know my son deserves more, and I know better. My stepfather didn't know any of this, you know, and I'm sure he had it a lot worse than I did. But I can't be that guy, you know. I can't be that guy. And my son, he needs me to be more. He needs me to stop and think about things. And he needs me to be more Christ-like. I need me to be more Christ-like. So, okay. All right. Was your mother a source of mercy and tenderness for you? This would be a good thing, by the way. I wrote, yes, I think she was. Did your mother allow you to be dangerous? Did she, for example, let you play with guns, ride your bikes with no hands, jump off the high dive, do risky things? My answer was yes, though with four boys in the house, it would have been impossible to stop us. I had three brothers, one brother and two stepbrothers, and she let us be dangerous. So I appreciate that in her. Many women ask their sons to fill a void in their soul that their husbands have left. Was that in any way true of your relationship with her? Was her relationship with you closer than the relationship she had with your father? Did she tell you secrets, discuss her life struggles, and even her struggle with your father with you? How did that make you feel? I wrote, my mom took every opportunity to tell me what a horrible person my father was and would give me a running total on how far behind he was in his child support payments. This too, you know, is a wound, because it's bad enough he left. It's bad enough he left when I was 2 years old. It's bad enough I rarely ever saw him. But then to hear how he is leaving us destitute, you know, on the verge of, you know, bankruptcy, you know, and to hear what a horrible person he is constantly, it doesn't help. I mean, would it be better to have him leave when I was 2 years old and then to hear what a wonderful person he was? I don't know. I don't think so. No, I don't think so. But I don't think you also should tell your kids what a horrible person your ex is either. So there comes a time in every young man's life when he leaves his mother's side and enters the world of men, starting with his father's world. How was the separation from your mom? Did she let go willingly, encourage you to move into your father's world? Did she take it difficultly? Did she make it difficult? Did she even understand? I was forced to separate myself from my father and stepfather the summer after my 11th grade of high school. There was an incident at my uncle's house, and I won't go into the details of that incident because it doesn't have anything to do with my parents. But I started walking home. I got very upset, and there was a physical injury to myself. I got very upset, started walking home, and it was probably almost 10 miles home, maybe. I don't know. It was quite a walk. And I got maybe a half mile down the road when my stepfather pulled up the car, and I refused to go with him. And so he left, went back, and he came back, and he said, you know, your mom is insisting that you get in the car and come back. And I refused. And he grabbed me, he wrestled me to the ground, and I started yelling at him, calling him, you know, names that I shouldn't have called him. And he realized what he was doing, and he let me go and went back. And that's when my mom came the next time, and she took me to my grandfather's house, her dad, and I finished out my 11th grade living at my grandfather's house. And then that summer I moved to Florida to my father's parents' house. So I guess I separated myself from them. I don't even remember what the question was. So, I mean, I guess in a way she willingly let me go because she obviously could have refused. She was my mom, you know, I was a minor. So, I guess she had decided this was best for me. I never really had that discussion with her. So yeah, you know, I guess I had to forcefully remove myself from my parents. But it was a good thing. I mean, I really found myself during my senior year of high school down in Florida. I kind of left. I was kind of a loner here. Before then, I kind of was able to leave that behind, make friends down there, have some independence. Yeah, I made a lot of mistakes, done things I shouldn't have done, but I kind of found myself. So I guess that was a good thing. What is your relationship like with her today as compared to your relationship with your dad? Who do you go to talk to about your life? My relationship with my mom right now is, it's not the greatest, simply because she's very opinionated, not very understanding as far as my Christian walk. She likes to tell me what I should be doing, and I guess she's not quite let go. But she doesn't seem to realize, you know, I'm 44 years old now, and I have a 13-year-old son, and I'm married, and I have my own house, and a job, and my own life. So she's the same way with my brother. She doesn't seem to want to let go and let us make our own mistakes. And even when we have successes, if it's not the way she would have done it, it's a mistake. So, you know, my relationship with my mom is kind of strained right now. And it has been for a long time. Simply for that reason. And she thinks I'm mad at her all the time because when we talk on the phone, I don't talk a lot on the phone. I'm not a big phone talker. You know, I'll talk behind the mic, yeah. But when it comes to a telephone, I just don't really have conversations. So I kind of give one and two word answers, and so she thinks I'm upset with her, when I'm really not. So I got to get this moving along. All right, masculinity is the essence that is hard to articulate, but that a boy naturally craves just as he craves food and water. It is something passed between men, the traditional way of raising sons, notes Robert Bly, which lasted for thousands and thousands of years, amounted to fathers and sons living in close, murderously close proximity, while the father taught the son a trade, perhaps farming or carpentering, or blacksmithing, or tailoring. My father taught me to fish. We would spend long days together out in a boat on a lake, trying to catch fish. I will never ever forget his delight in me when I'd hook one, but the fish were never really the important thing. It was the delight, the contact, the masculine presence, gladly bestowing itself on me. Attaboy, Tiger. Bring him in. That's it. Well done. What are some favorite memories together with your dad? Why are they favorite memories? My biological father, I just really don't have any. With my stepfather, he would take us fishing. But when I say he'd take us fishing, I mean that he took me and my three brothers and my mom fishing. And it usually ended up being him and his two sons in a boat and me and my brother and my mom in a boat. So there was never really that one-on-one father-son time, you know, that he really invested into me. Whenever he did something nice for me, it's because was doing it nice for the family. You know, there'd be trips to Cedar Point, you know, an amusement park in Ohio, or, you know, like the fishing trips, or he'd coach softball, you know, but he never really sat down and taught me how to throw a ball or catch a ball or hit a ball or anything like that. He'd coach, yeah, great, but that's, you know, with 12 kids, that's not one-on-one time with your son. So, you know, that's kind of another wound I got. When a father and son spend long hours together, says Bly, we could say that a substance almost like food passes from the older body to the younger. This is why my boys love to wrestle with me, why any healthy boy wants the same with his father. They love the physical contact, to brush against his cheek, feel the sandpaper of his whiskers, my strength all around them, and to test theirs on me. Do you recall this longing? Did you wrestle with your dad? Was there regular warm contact with him? No. No, there wasn't. I never really got that. Like I said, my relationship with my stepfather was one of annoyance. So I never really got that. And, you know, my biological father was never around for that. And are you comfortable being physically affectionate with your children? Absolutely. You know, that's whenever my son will come up and want a hug from me, I'm like, yes, he's 13 and he's still not too old to hug his dad. Oh my gosh, it's such a blessing. I love hugging my son. I'll do it all day long if I could, you know, because I know there's going to be a time when that's not going to be okay. But it's never been a problem. You know, spending time with my son is just something I love to do. You know, it might be just playing Minecraft. We might be on the other side of the room with each other playing Minecraft together. You know, but I love taking him fishing. I love, you know, playing catch with him, riding bikes together. I just love him so much. And, yeah, I have no problem telling my son that I love him, telling him that, you know, he has what it takes. You know, And it's kind of hard too at the same time because, you know, that's something I didn't have. And as I'm hugging my son, too, I can see what I missed out on. I can see the look in his eyes as he's looking up at me. And I can see that it's something I missed out on. So it's bittersweet, I guess you'd say. So, all right. What did your father teach you to do when you were a boy? Throw a curve, fix a car, paint a landscape. Describe what he passed along to you in the following arenas. Outdoors. He taught me to fish, but it was always, you know, like with a lot of dads, they get annoyed fishing with their kids because they don't really get time to fish because they're always fixing a snag, you know, or changing a bait or worm, you know, putting a worm on a hook or taking a fish off a hook or something like that. So they get annoyed with their children, and it shows because they don't have time to do it themselves. And like I said, my stepfather had four boys. And, you know, but when I take my son fishing, I go fishing separately from my son so that when I do take my son fishing, I'm not concentrating on myself getting to fish. My time with my son is time with my son, and it's teaching him to fish, and it's encouraging him and congratulating him, you know, things like that. Sports, baseball, you know, he coached me in baseball, but he didn't really teach me. You know, he wasn't really out there playing catch with me, not that I can remember, okay? But if he was, I think I would remember that. And the other categories are all zeros. Woodcraft, fighting, self-defense, women, finances, and God. You know, all the rest of those are zeros. He didn't do any of those with me. How would you sum up your father's life lessons to you? Examples: work hard and you'll get ahead. Always look out for number one. You can't really trust anyone. My father's life lessons to me, well, my biological father, my life lesson is, you know, things get hard, leave. Just up and go. You know, it's not worth fighting for. my stepfather's was, you know, I married your mom and not you. You know, you're just baggage. And like I said, I had asthma when I was a kid, a pretty acute asthma. So there was a lot of bills. So another thing I got from my stepdad was I was expensive. You know, there's a lot of good things I can have right now if it wasn't for you. You know, we could have a nicer house, or I could drive nicer cars, or do other things if it wasn't for your asthma, if it wasn't for you. Every boy in his journey to become a man takes an arrow in the center of his heart, in the place of his strength, because wounds are rarely discussed and even more rarely healed. Every man carries a wound, and the wound is nearly always given by the father. What is your wound? Can you put words to it? Do you remember how it was given and why it came? Yeah, my wound from my father is, you know, like I said, he left when I was two. He moved from Michigan to West Virginia. So the statement that was to me was, there's something more important than you, you know. I mean, I can understand, like I always say, you know, I can understand if you could not live with my mom anymore. But what is more important, you know, in West Virginia, than staying in Michigan with your two sons and, you know, being a part of their lives? What is more important? Obviously, it was another woman. But that's the message. You know, you're not important enough. You know, that's the wound I had for that, from that. From my stepfather, you're an annoyance. You know, you're not a jock. You're not good enough. You're expensive. You're not tough enough. You're a mama's boy. All right, and what is the message of the wound, and or that series of wounds, and what did it say about yourself? Well, I guess I just answered that, you know. All right, what did your father name you? What identity did he bestow on you as a boy and young man? Perhaps there might even be an actual name he gave you, like Seagull or Fatty, or it says, it blurts it out, but it basically says, or Shithead. He never really said these, but, you know, like I said before, I got mama's boy, expensive, things like that. The passive wounds are not as obvious. Passive fathers give a blow that is harder to define because it didn't come as a blow. It came as an absence. Words unspoken, affections withheld. As Bly said, not receiving any blessing from your father is an injury. Not seeing your father when you are small, never being with him, having a remote father, an absent father, a workaholic father is an injury. If you still have no clue as to what your wound might be, go to the effect of the wound and work backwards. Do you live every day with a deep inner strength that comes from knowing that you are a man, that you have what it takes, or are you a driven man or a passive man? When did that feeling of drivenness or passivity set in? Did it originate during a certain period in your life? I see myself, like I said before, I see myself more as passive than as driven or aggressive. The effects of my wound, I don't know. You know, I love the movie Fight Club. Because I think one of the effects of my wound is if I was to ever really be in a fight, I have dreams that I'm in a fight, but when I go to throw a punch, I always pull it. I never really contact. So I have this subconscious thought that if I was to ever really, really be in a fight, I could never really land a punch. So yeah, I mean, I love the movie Fight Club. Just the concept of finding a friend or somebody, and just agreeing to beat the snot out of each other, and you know, shake hands and walk away, not because you're angry with each other, but just because you want to test your mettle against each other. You know, I know it's stupid, but I sometimes I feel the urge to do that, just to prove to myself that I can throw a punch and actually, you know, bloody somebody's nose or black an eye, you know. And I think that's an effect of my wound is, you know, I want to be strong and powerful and dangerous, but something inside me says that you don't have what it takes to do that. And, you know, some people will say, well, why do you need to punch somebody? Well, I don't need to punch somebody at this particular moment, but there may come a day. You know? I don't know. It might sound stupid. All right, A Break in the Clouds. You'll probably know what this is from. I'm just going to read it. My child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away. He was talking for I knew it And as he grew, he'd say, "I'm going to be like you, Dad. I know I'm going to be like you." And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll be together then. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, "Thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play." "Can you teach me to throw?" I said, "Not today. I got a lot to do." He said, "That's okay." And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. It said, "I'm going to be like him, yeah. You know I'm going to be like him." I hope that every time you hear that song, it will make you stop and think. If you have sons, it'll make you stop and think. And hopefully it'll make you stop and think of your dad, you know, and maybe discover what that wound is in you. I think by now you have some idea of the impact your wound has had upon your masculine heart. Much of your life ends up being shaped by it in one way or another. We take a wound and with it comes a message, a lie about us and about the world, and often about God too. The wound and lie then lend to a vow, a resolution to never ever do again whatever it was that might have brought the wound. From that vow, we develop a false self. So there's a little diagram on here that says the wound or the lie leads to a vow and equals a false self. An example is, my father left, and the wound is my father left. The lie is, you're on your own. The vow is, I will never trust anyone again. And the false self is, a very independent, driven man. Can you remember making a sort of vow when you were younger, maybe after being wounded? What was that vow? You know, when I was young, I never really saw my wounds as wounds, you know, or my injuries as injuries. But now that I was older, I see them as wounds. And in order for that wound to heal, you have to know what the arrow is, so you can pull it out. And that's the difficult part, you know, because that wound's not going to heal until you pull that arrow out. And if you don't know what that arrow is, you can't pull it out. So you kind of have to work backwards in your life to figure out, okay, what's the effect of my wound? You know, what's my false self? You know, can that tell me what my vow was? And from there, can I figure out what the wound and the lie was? So, yeah, you got to figure out what the arrow is so you can get it out and start healing that wound. All right, last page, everyone. Whew, this has been rough. Can you see that vow affecting you today? As I said, men either overcompensate for their wound and become driven or violent men, or they shrink back and go passive, retreating men. Which would you say is true for you? Is it a little of both, depending on the arena? Driven at work, passive at home? I'm just kind of passive. I guess if I enjoyed my work, I'd be a little more driven. How many men feel stuck, either paralyzed and unable to move, or unable to stop moving? Which would you say is true of you these days? Well, I guess that goes back to me being able to throw a punch. I mean, somehow I feel paralyzed in that situation. And one final question. What would you have loved to hear from your father? Let's say that your father has died, and you are cleaning out his belongings, going through all his effects. In a desk drawer of his, you discover an envelope with your name on it, written in your father's handwriting. As you think about opening that letter, what would you long for it to say? Is it an apology? An affirmation? Write that letter. If you're listening to this, I want you to write that letter. Write that letter, not as the one he might have written it, but as the one you would have given anything from him to have written. What do you long for it to say from him to you? Oh, well, I guess, you know, I guess it would be an apology to start with. You know, an explanation of why my father left me. Letting me know that it had nothing to do with me. Letting me know that he was proud of me, proud of who I became, proud of the father I become, the man I become. Acknowledging that he had nothing to do with that. Yeah, I mean, that's tough. I mean, what do I need to say to my son? I mean, I need to look at that too. I mean, I can't wait until I die and he finds a letter in my desk. I need to tell him now. I need to tell my son that I'm proud of him, that, you know, he is a man. That my son has what it takes. He is strong and powerful and dangerous. And that he is a child of God and that he is my son. And I love him no matter what. You know, I guess those are all the things I'd like to hear from my father. You know, I tell myself that it doesn't really matter because I've kind of written him off. But, I mean, does it matter? I mean, I don't know. You know, would it affect me if I actually found something like that? Probably. I don't know. It's, you know, if you have the guts to sit down and write something like that, I would love to see it. You know, if you are able to, and if you think you could send that, like I say before, you don't have to use your real name. You don't have to use your father's name. But, you know, I'm sure some of the guys on listening to this show would love to hear some things like that. So, there you go. All right, let's close this up. Take a little bit of time. And if your father bestowed a clear sense of masculinity upon you, give great thanks to God for having blessed you with a father who gave to you what so few have had. Ask God to carry you on in your masculine journey and take you deeper and farther into your heart. If your father didn't bestow a masculine blessing upon you, take some time right now to lay it before God. Oh, God is true. My heart is wounded within me. Come to me, dear Jesus. Speak to my heart such strong and sure words. Affirm my masculinity and grant me the ears to hear you speak those life-giving words. Take me now on the journey of my heart's recovery. Show me more clearly the assault I've endured and what I've done with my heart over these years. Only keep my heart, I pray, and be my gentle my guide every step. In your name I pray. All right. Wow, that was rough. Okay. I'm glad I did it, but I'm glad it's over. So that was chapter 4, The Wound of the Wild at Heart Field Manual. Thanks for listening, everyone. You can get hold of this podcast. You can call and leave a voicemail. The number for that is 707-872-7442. You can email me at asg4cm@gmail.com. I've got Facebook. My Twitter is PB&J Show without the O. And there's a Surviving Guide for Christian Men Facebook page. You can check that out. If you found us on iTunes, or if you have iTunes, and you want other guys to be able to find this show, the best way of doing that on iTunes is by giving us a 5-star rating and review. It just helps us move along and move us up in the list a little bit, so others can find us easier. And there's links for Blueberry and Get Glue and all that great stuff in the show notes for this episode. And you can find that again at pbnjnetwork.com/ASG4CM018. My name is Brian Carruthers, and thank you so much for listening. Next week is Chapter 5, A Battle for a Man's Heart. And I look forward to getting through that. Like I said, I'd love to have you on the show, so please contact me. Have a great day. Bye.